Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. We're hoping to make contact with State Representative Kim Coates and have her discuss the status of the project called the Carbon Capture or Carbon Sequestration, a facility that is being proposed for the Lake Maurepas area. And I'll kind of give you a little bit of background, what I know about it. There was a series of town hall meetings held in the area. This one was in Ponchatoula, and I made it a point to go out there because I had so many of my listeners on the outdoor show talking about this and how much they were opposed to an environmentally sensitive area like this Lake Maurepas lake bottom being, you know, used as a sequestration facility and the amount of impact it could have. In fact, I think we have State Representative Coates joining us now. Kim, are you with us?
I am. Good morning.
Hey, thank you for joining us. I wanted to get you on to talk about this topic. I had heard you make your presentation back at the town hall meeting in Ponchatoula, and you know, despite the seriousness of potential repercussions of this topic, it just hasn't received anywhere near the publicity it deserves. And I think there's some folks that like it that way and would like to keep it that way. But I think the public needs to know a lot more about this. And it's called carbon sequestration, also known as carbon capture project in the Lake Pontchartrain, Lake Maurepas basins and surrounding parishes. And you know, while there's some your people that you represent, your constituents are very concerned, they're very knowledgeable about it. There's some environmental groups that have been very active and many other elected officials like yourself that have been monitoring this project. A lot of our listeners are hearing about this particular project for the first time, and some of them are even learning about the whole concept of carbon capture itself. So if you would, let's go back a ways and start off by explaining what is carbon capture or carbon sequestration.
So to put it in easy terms, when a manufacturing facility or refinery or something that is making a product and the byproduct is carbon that goes into the air, it will then be captured and put into high pressure to make it from a gas to like a slurry, and then pushed and piped and sequestered down below the surface, usually about a mile down. And that's kind of the easy way to explain. And the whole purpose of this for the last few years was to reduce emissions for global warming.
And what is the reward? We'll get into the risks that are involved with it, which are many, but what is this being sold as? Why was Lake Maurepas area selected, and what would be the benefit to the state and to the area?
So this is just kind of a theory of why Lake Maurepas was chosen. Well, there's one landowner, which is the state, and the state issues the permits. So it was pretty easy. And also, because it's state property and wildlife and fisheries is, you know, gets royalties and lease payments and stuff. So it was a money maker for the state. And so some of these other projects will be on private land, but this one was public. It was pretty easy. There's very few oil wells or abandoned oil wells on the property, but I believe there is about 28 on the west side of Lake Maurepas. So that is why we were told that was chosen, was because it's kind of open land and the state had it and they could do it very easily to get those permits.
So the permits that were needed to be acquired was the Clean Water Act requires that an act, I think it's 404 permit that has to be issued, and then also a Louisiana Coastal Use Permit. What is the scope and the nature of this project? What will it look like if it's completed?
So let's go back a little bit further, because to actually do the carbon capture itself, they had to do seismic studies. So back, and this is where our community started getting really involved and really upset, because they shot like thousands of shots of dynamite under Lake Maurepas, and there was some blowouts, there was some fish kills, and there was different things that was going on with the crabs. Because when you start disturbing that lake bed that has all these microscopic organisms, it sequesters different pollutions and different things. When you stir all that up, it really disturbs the whole ecosystem. And that's been our complaint from the beginning. So they did the seismic testing. Then they did a class 5 well on the south side of the lake, is where they start to monitor. And now where the project currently is, they're trying to get that 404 and that coastal use permit to do all the pipelines. So they will come from Ascension Parish down Airline Highway, turn into the Maurepas Wildlife Management Area, come all the way into the lake, and then spread out with multiple wells throughout the lake with a few miles of pipelines under the lake.
In addition to the buried pipelines, if I'm not mistaken, I think there will be a total of 19 different structures that will be put into Lake Maurepas itself, as far as control platforms, valve platforms, prop wash areas, pretty much an extensive commercial operation there. Let's talk about Lake Maurepas itself. I have been enjoying Lake Maurepas for decades. I mean, it is a very unique area. It's a brackish kind of lake. It has a mixture of salt water and fresh water, which, you know, has an enormous variety of species. It's connected by several, the main pass. It's actually connected to the whole Lake Pontchartrain Basin. It's a nursery ground for a lot of seafood, and it's fed by several rivers. It's the Tickfaw River, the Amite River, the Blind River, and it's a highly recreational area as well as a commercial area, too, and what I would call very environmentally sensitive to something like this. In my experience in covering these permitting for any type of construction or permits that are issued by the Army Corps of Engineers, there's always what's called an EIS, an Environmental Impact Statement, that a study that has to be done. And then it tells you the negative aspects of what will happen if this project proceeds. And in this case, at the time when I was covering this during the summer, there was no EIS done. How do you get a permit approved with no environmental impact statement, or has that been done now?
No, sir. And it has not been done, and it hasn't been determined if it needs to be done. And that's where many of us, the legislators and the locals, is like, how can you move forward when you're breaking the NEPA laws, which is like the National Environmental Protection Act, where, like I said, there's already been two major permits that's been given, the seismic and the class 5 well. Then there'll be the pipelines, and then later will be the class 6 well. Well, part of the NEPA laws is that you have to look at it comprehensively and what it does to the environment as a total. You can't piecemeal it. And we feel like that's already been broken because they're not looking at it as a whole of what they're doing to the ecosystem. Plus, the government is spending $330 million on a freshwater diversion to protect those wetlands, and then we're going to turn around and put a pipeline through it. You know, so there, and then there's the levee that is being built. So that changes the hydrology. So how does that fit in and change? Like, there's so much going on in this basin and this area that no one is looking at it comprehensively. And that's why we are pushing and asking that an EIS is required to move forward.
You know, in addition to the environmental threats that you mentioned, you know, there's also the possibility of what would be considered a catastrophic accident where it could blow either the pipelines or the wells. And then, you know, is it a requirement for the company that's applying for the permit? And this was one question I would wanted to ask. Is there a requirement to approving the permit that if, in fact, there is a catastrophic event that takes place as a result of this, will they accept liability for it in perpetuity to recover the cost of the loss of the environment, the seafood, the resources, the wildlife, the environmental impact to the water condition? Has that been considered?
I don't think it has to the extent it needs to be. You know, that is what I have said, even in committee, that if you have a catastrophic failure, if it's big enough to where that carbon is then depressurized and turns back into a gas and it comes back out of the lake and you have people out there on boats, the boat motors will not work. And how do you rescue people when you can't get to them by a motorized boat? You know, and how do you get to them in time? Because we saw what happened in Mississippi. So, and then even maybe if it's not big enough as a catastrophic failure to where it does release the carbon like that, but if it leaks into the lake water, it can become carbonic acid. So then you could have changes in the pH of the water. So how does that affect the whole ecosystem? And that's why I've been trying to tell other representatives and senators that this project is so much different than all these other projects and is so much more sensitive because we have so much more at stake. And just talking about the clams and all the microscopic organisms on the bottom that can be disturbed, well, that all is in the food chain because the fish eat it, and then, you know, that passes on. When you start disturbing all of that and disturbing the possibility of all those heavy metals that are down there and it gets into our food chain, I mean, that's why this is so much more different than all these others, and that we need to look at that before anything moves forward.
And all of those concerns that you're mentioning would be addressed had there been an EIS, an environmental impact study done, which there is none. And you mentioned if there's one required, how could there not be one required for this?
Exactly.
I mean, you need to have an EIS done if you're going to dig a ditch on your property sometime.
I know. Well, and what I've also, in my original letter to the Corps of Engineers, is that in the 1980s, and I'm sure you remember, when the lakes were not safe to swim in, they were polluted because of the shell dredging. Well, they saw back in the 80s that Lake Maurepaw was so much worse than Lake Pontchartrain because it's more shallow, it's smaller, the way the hydrology and the winds and the tides. And so they immediately banned the shell dredging back in the 80s. And all of that was because of a court case, because the Corps was piecemealing each individual shell dredging operation. So the state attorney general back, I think it was 83, sued the Corps of Engineers because an EIS was not done. And the courts upheld it. Well, they appealed. It went to the appellate court, and the appellate court upheld it and said, you have to follow the NEPA law. You have to do an EIS. So they did an EIS and showed how bad it was, and even that possibly parts of the lake would never come back and be recovered. And now we're going to get a loophole and allow this. So that's why, you know, I think we have the proof from before, and we need to go back and look at it again and say, wait a minute, we cannot make this same mistake we did before.
You know, Kim, I think your analogy to shell dredging was right on target. I can well remember the shell dredging wars. And, you know, people who don't remember the Rangia clam, which is the basis of the food chain in Lakes Pontchartrain and Lake Maurepas, they were being dredged by tons, by dredge barges out in the lakes. And they were pumped and then washed and they were sold. And that's what lined our shoulders of our roads. They didn't use gravel. They used clam shells. And then when the studies were done, it was a result of what was causing the pollution and the detriment to the seafood and the resources. And it's been a long time since shell dredging has been outlawed, but those lakes have made a tremendous recovery because of that. And I think, you know, to for a project this large, which would require this much and put this many things at risk, certainly requires that environmental impact statement. Kim, we're going to take a break here, but we want to come back. I want to know if you've gotten any support. Now, I know your local cohorts, the representatives from all these surrounding parishes, and there are several of them that are being affected by this directly as well as indirectly. Have you gotten any support from the statewide legislature and also from our federal elected officials? Have you contacted them and what support they, if any, have given us? We're talking with Representative Kimberly Landry Coates. He's a state representative for District 73, and we're talking about the carbon sequestration, the permit application to create an industry in Lake Maurepas, the area that will store carbon dioxide below the bed of the lake, and raises as many questions with very few answers. We'll be back to discuss it further. And if you'd like to weigh in, it's 504-260-1870. That's our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. I'm Don Dubuque filling in for Newell Norman on this Tuesday morning on the Big 870 WW.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, and if you're just tuning in, we're talking about a proposal and actually some permitting process by a product called Air Products, a company called Air Products, who are applying for permits in order to put in effect a carbon dioxide sequestration facility, also known as carbon capture, in the Lake Maurepas. Lake Maurepas, if you're not familiar with it, is a shallow, brackish tidal estuary that is about averages 9 to 10 feet deep. It connects to the Lake Pontchartrain Basin through Pass Manchac. It is fed by four rivers, the Tickfaw, the Blind, the Ameet, and the Talbany. It is one of the largest forested wetlands in the nation. It's an enormous cypress swamp, and it's cherished for its unspoiled beauty. There are a lot of activities like fishing, boating, hunting, kayaking, wildlife photography. There's a commercial fishing industry, seafood retailers, restaurants, marine businesses, ecotourism. And a lot of people have built homes and camps to enjoy and appreciate the scenic beauty of this lake. And this project through its main operation could possibly threaten this. There's clams and shells on the lake bottom, which could be at risk. The organisms, the microorganisms that are the basis of the food chain, we're talking about clams, shrimp, worms, they could be destroyed by some of the trenching. And to this date, the public has never really had an opportunity for a large, overall, comprehensive hearing about the project. The permits have been issued in segments, which is a violation of the National Environmental Policy Act, which requires the full project to be presented. And also, as a rule, environmental impact studies are always required whenever environmental harm is a possibility. In this case, that has not been done. We're talking with Representative Kim Coates, who has been very active in finding out more about this and trying to get some of these permits more looked at a little bit more closely for the benefit of her constituents. Kim, I know Senator Bill Wheat and Representative Muscarello and Shane Mack, all of you in the local area have been doing your best to try to get the best information we can and find out whether this project is a fit for this particular area. Have you gotten any support from the state, from the other state legislature, or even our elected officials in Washington? Have you contacted them about looking into this and seeing why this project, which is basically, I'm going to call it being steamrolled, is taking place at such an alarming fast pace where the public is, it's just kind of going right over their head with very little publicity?
Yes. So each of those local delegates that you mentioned, each of us have actually carried a bill or multiple bills in the last few years to either slow down the project or limit the above surface structures that could be built in a lake, different things. But all of those bills had failed in the legislature. But, you know, the more we keep talking about it and explaining it, you know, it seems like others are starting to understand what we have been explaining the last few years of how sensitive this lake is, how sensitive this ecosystem is, how it's just kind of foolish to be doing restoration projects with millions of dollars of taxpayers' money and then turn around and dredge through it for a pipeline that they will not mitigate in the same watershed, in that same Marpaw wetlands. They're going to go all the way to the north and restore property. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And so it seems like others are starting to come around and understand our viewpoints and what's going on. So I think in the future, there will be more next year that we can do. We've reached out to our congressional delegates as well. Some of them didn't even know two, three years ago that it was proposed for the lake. When this permit came up, I actually reached out to Congressman Steve Scalise's office again, and I said we would send all of our letters, including just recently, we're trying to finish up the letter right now, that the Tangipahoa and the Livingston state delegation representatives and senators all signed on a letter together to request a public hearing on the North Shore. So all these other public hearings have been going on in Baton Rouge or on the South Shore. And we have all this huge community up on the north side of the lake that it's been very difficult to many to even attend a public hearing because they've just been in other communities. So we've all signed a letter sending to the Corps of Engineers and to the state, and we're going to pass it on to our congressional delegation as well. About having another hearing on the North Shore. That way we can really stress how important this lake is and how important that nothing should be permitted any further until that EIS is done.
Well, I'll be talking to Congressman Scalise, in fact, right after you and I end this conversation, and I'll certainly bring it up to him and ask him what he thinks about it and what can be done. You know, you brought up a point about we're investing coastal restoration dollars into this area, and then they want to come right through and put this in it and tear it up. You know, it kind of reminds me, getting back to the shell dredging issue. You know, what was going on was the state was actually earning money off the shells that were being sold, you know, to fill road beds and shoulders of roads, and then the state would actually go in and dredge up the clam shells, and then they would build an artificial reef somewhere else at another fee, and then they would go right back and dredge over the reefs that they built and turn the money over again. And that kept going on and on until finally the help of the Lake Pontchartrain Basin Foundation got involved, and it was kind of a long battle, but shell dredging was end. And I kind of, again, see a parallel with this. Have you gotten any assistance from any of the conservation and environmental organizations and associations that are made up of citizens group like the Basin Foundation or Environmental Justice or any of those?
Yes, sir. So many of those have actually even came and testified in committees. The Pontchartrain Conservancy, they've even, that used to be the Pontchartrain Basin Foundation, have actually, you know, submitted a letter to the Corps of Engineers and stuff. So, yes, they have been involved in explaining, just like you said, all the coastal restoration projects and how we're going to, you know, affect those and what are we going to leave for the next generation if we allow this to move forward.
Yeah, and I know the Louisiana Wildlife Federation has also been very active in this. Kim, I got a listener that brings up a good point. They wanted to know, what does the governor and the Department of Environmental Quality have to say about this? Have you been in touch with the Governor Landry since he's taken office, and also DEQ as far as, you know, I guess they could call for an EIS. That might be under their purview.
So it's actually the Department of Natural Resources. Well, it's and renamed again, I think it's Conservation and Energy Department, is the one that's going to be permitting. You know, we've had multiple conversations. We've had conversations with the governor's office, and we've requested a meeting with the governor to discuss this again. We have, you know, been trying to, we've actually went and sit down and talked with DEQ, especially when some of the other studies were coming out about the heavy metals and different things that are already showing up in the lake. So what future testing, what can we do to protect this? You know, what is in the sediment? You know, if we're going to start disturbing a million cubic yards of this lake bed, like what's going to happen to our lake, you know? And so we have been having those discussions and continuing to have those discussions of why this is so important and what we can do to be more transparent and to talk to the public and give them the information that they need as well.
Well, the governor heads up agencies that have direct responsibility of monitoring this. Have y'all had any conversations or appealed to the governor to meet with your group?
We have. We have Senator Wheat actually just probably in the last week or two asked to have a face-to-face sit-down meeting and just talk it out of how important this ecosystem is, not just to the environment and stuff and to the fisheries, but the economy of how important, like you were mentioning, the recreation and the commercial fishing and stuff, how important that is. That back in the 80s, there was no swimming signs. And then they had all these camps and different things along the South Shore and stuff, even that they all just went away because no one could go out in the water. It was so polluted. Well, we don't want that to happen here and lose this great resource and an actual economic engine in the future.
You know, Representative Coates, we hear a lot from constituents about, you know, we elect officials and they go up to Baton Rouge and they do nothing. They just collect taxpayer money. I got to commend you and your cohorts for getting so involved in this issue. I mean, when I saw the passion that was displayed at that town hall meeting, I think you share exactly how your constituents feel. But it's going to take more than that. It's going to take the state, maybe the federal officials, to get involved in this. What would you say to just the average citizen that loves to go fishing or boating or has a camp or they harvest seafood in the Lake Maurepire? What would you say to them to what they should do to get involved in this and how they can help maybe turn it around?
Yes, sir. I would definitely say reach out to their local police juries, councils, state representatives, senators, even the governor. But, you know, there is a public hearing coming up on November 4th that the people can actually attend and speak to the court and give comments. So that is important. You know, there's some documentation out on Facebook and stuff on that.
Where will that meeting be held? That meeting, where will it be held?
It's going to be in Laplace. Let me see if I can find that. I don't have the address in front of me.
If you'll send it to me, I'll make sure we put that out for the November. That's going to be a very important meeting. Well, thank you so much, Kim, for joining us, and thank you for the hard work that you and your cohorts have done in trying to make sure that we get the proper coverage and protections that we need if something like this is going to be done in our state.
Yes, and thank you. Thank you for allowing me to come on and to speak to the public as well.
Anytime. If something needs to get out to the public, you know where to find us.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks again. All right. When we come back after this quick break, I'll tell you what's coming up in the final hour. Steve Scalise is going to join us. We'll tell you what we'll be chatting with him right after this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.